First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com, where you can find all the latest of these shows and everything else that we do. Ed Martin is running a tad bit late, apparently, so hopefully we will hear from him real soon. In the meantime, call-in numbers, as always, are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. And remember, you guys that are in the listening queue already, we appreciate it every single night. But make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. And for everybody else, you can log in with Facebook and everything as well. And join the live chat if you decide you want to chat. So we have all kinds of ways for you to get involved, have all kinds of things to talk about. And I tell you what, let's just get started. There's been a lot going on of late with County Attorney Mike O'Connell. Now, we've been talking a lot about Attorney General Jack Conway and, you know, his right-hand Democratic hack, Dave Stengel, who's decided he wants to run for elected office again. You know, but in the midst of all of this, a few months ago, if you recall, Jefferson County Attorney Mike O'Connell had challenged the judges in the court system. He had worded a letter to Chief District Judge Ann Bailey Smith, and the letter basically was telling them that he wanted them to stop what he called disingenuous maneuvering by defense lawyers in drunk driving cases. Basically, what he thought they were doing was they were playing some maneuvers or letting drunk drivers off or not allowing the prosecution to appeal these non-sentences, if you will, with the judges. Well, the judges didn't take that very good. Didn't take that very good at all. The Courier-Journal had actually done a series of articles. They were talking about how most DUIs that come before judges result in acquittals. And O'Connell basically decided to say that he went down this road because he felt it was calling the integrity of the district court into question. Well, the thing is, even Mike O'Connell, really has a problem. As you may recall, I actually agreed with Mike O'Connell, which is very, very rare for me because this guy's a Democratic hack, too. I don't have any respect for it. But I actually agreed with him in this particular situation. We have to find a way to bring things together so we can get full accountability. And I had no problem with him sending a letter to these guys. Well, apparently, Kentucky Bar Association got involved. And anyway, O'Connell has sent a copy of the letter to the Chief Public Defender, Dan Goyette. Judges and defense lawyers felt that there was improper contact with the court. I wonder how they feel about that when they talk to lawyers outside the courtroom in existing cases, because it's the same damn deal, in my opinion. And, yes, it does happen. But apparently there were some charges or something filed with the Kentucky Bar. The judges didn't like this, so they went to the Bar Association. Kentucky Bar Association hearing officer has affirmed that there was a reprimand issued to Jefferson County Attorney Mike O'Connell for violating ethics rules. And basically they said he violated the ethics rules because of improper communication with judges on the merits of a case. Now, what makes this interesting to me is this is why I don't like the Kentucky Bar Association. I don't like the Judicial Conduct Commission or any of those people, because these people, as far as I'm concerned, play nothing but politics and do what they want to do in their positions. The officer found that even though O'Connell's letter to the judges didn't address the merits of any particular case, the ultimate purpose was to influence the outcome of pending and future cases, violating a rule that prohibits one-sided contact with judges. Well, here's the thing. For me, in the ethics rules that these guys all follow, you know, you're not allowed to improperly communicate with the judge on the merits of a case. Now, we want to split hairs here, fine. But since O'Connell basically said this seemed to be an institutional problem, not specifically geared toward any case, I don't see how the Kentucky Bar could find him violation of ethics at all, especially when you consider the sitting judge, Katie King, and others have done things that definitely apply to violating ethics laws and should be held accountable, and have never been accountable at all with the Kentucky Bar or the Judicial Conduct Commission. Those things disturb me. And as much as I can't stand Mike O'Connell, to think that he is going to get a reprimand over this because he just said, hey, look, you know, I think this is wrong. You're not giving the prosecution any room here for any appeals. You know, in his mind, he thought that that was hurting the citizens of Jefferson County. again, you know, Mike O'Connell plays politics, too, so it's hard for me to go down this road with this. But he didn't specify any one case. He just said that this was an institutional problem. He went on record at the time stating that he had a duty to speak out about how most DUIs are tried before judges result in acquittals because of the district court integrity, and I agree with that. That's what we do. We challenge, you know, and we try to get accountability. But it didn't work out that way. Apparently, there was a January 14th hearing before the Kentucky Bar Association Trial Commissioner, Philip George, Jr., and, you know, O'Connell and his lawyer said he had a First Amendment right to send a letter because he didn't mention any one case. I agree. George decided he was wrong because this addressed an issue that was going to influence the outcome of the future cases. But the bottom line is this. The bottom line is this. Anybody in political circles, anybody that knows anything about the legal system, anybody who spent any time within the legal system understands that judges and lawyers are really a tight-knit group when it comes to friendships. You don't find judges out there running around with construction guys. They generally hang with lawyers or judges and vice versa. There are people that represent DUI defendants down at Metro Hall that are close friends with judges. And there are trolls that literally, you know, go through the halls there. Hey, what are you here for today? $1,500, I can make that go away. You know, and so they go out and they troll and they get 1,500, 2,000 cash, whatever the going rate is today. You know, and they walk into a courtroom because they know the judge. And the judge shows leniency and lets the client off and everything else. The guy gets his 1,500, 2,000 cash. And rumor has it that they get split a couple of different ways between the lawyer and the judge and, you know, whatever this is involved. You know, I know these snakes do that from a financial end, or at least they did a few years ago when I used to spend a little time down there. Not as a defendant, thank God, until I got, you know, arrested for a false charge. But this is an everyday occurrence. Now, Michael Connell can't take the high road and act like he's trying some, you know, altruistic motive here. Like he is doing something that, you know, is going to benefit everybody because he is this great guy. We clearly know he's not. Look at what he's doing to David James right now because of politics. He's no different from an accusation standpoint than the people he's accusing now. But it still doesn't make it right. So the reprimand I felt was wrong. You know, when Katie King and Jim King can be found guilty of election campaign finance violations and nothing is done there to two elected officers, if you will, Katie King, a judge, Tim King, a Metro Council, not only member but president, you know, and so forth and so on. So these things get serious, and I don't know why in the hell we can sit here and tell Michael Connell that he's going to be in trouble for this and get a private reprimand and then have to deal with it just for saying, hey, look, I think this is wrong. And that's exactly what it was. Now, the only reason this thing, of course, I even got public is because, you know, Michael Connell had appealed the rulings. And once the ruling was made back in January and he appealed it, once that appeal is done, then it becomes public record what the reprimand was. So he put himself in a position knowingly that you know, this was going to be a situation. And so, you know, we got to deal with what we've got. And that's just the way it is. Just a reminder, phone number 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. And welcome to everybody that's in the listening queue right now. And don't forget the number one on your dial pad. So this thing with Michael Connell continues gearing up. We've got even more going on. You know, this is a political show, but it does get kind of comical sometimes. It really does, and I'll tell you why. We have got U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell. He's always under the radar, always under the gun, and I'm no fan of Mitch. You know, I do think that he doesn't have a worthy opponent in Matt Bevin, even though one of our co-hosts, Dale the Truth, will disagree with that. And I'll talk about Bevin in a minute, but it's interesting because Mitch McConnell's campaign on Monday barred Joe Sonka. For those of you guys who don't know who Joe Sonka is, he's the news editor for Leo Weekly magazine here in Louisville. But he barred Joe Sonka from attending his press conference after he had completed this roundtable discussion with veterans. It's funny. His campaign had Louisville Metro Police make sure that Sonka wasn't allowed to enter the conference room at the Hilton Garden Inn where this roundtable discussion took place. Now, McConnell, during the press conference, basically said that he didn't know why Sonka had been prohibited from attending. However, we know that's not true because Jesse Benton, Mitch McConnell's campaign manager, said that they had barred Joe Sonka, and his excuse was that other reporters had objected to Joe Sonka asking any questions. And, of course, Jesse Benton refused to tell us who they were. And, of course, Sonka was also originally told, before Jesse Benton decided to mention anything here, he was originally told he couldn't attend it because there was limited space in the room, even though half the chairs in there were empty. This is the kind of stuff that goes on here in Kentucky in politics. That's it. You know. So, you know, Joe Sonka, who has been very critical of Mitch McConnell, got barred essentially for that because that's the way it is in Louisville with down and dirty politics. Now, I said something about Matt Bevin. There are a lot of people out there who want to scream and yell that Mitch needs to go, and you see all this ditch Mitch slogans and everything else, and that Matt Bevin is the one who truly cares. Matt Bevin is this Tea Partier. Insert everything here. Well, the problem with Matt Bevin is he just can't follow through on anything. in my opinion. If you disagree, I'll totally understand that. But, you know, we did reach out to Matt Bevin's campaign on a couple of occasions and never got any responses. For the thousands of you guys here in Louisville who follow this show, this is a political show. Every one of you guys tell me that you're voters anytime I talk to you, whether we're out in public or whether I'm talking to you on air through email and all the other things. And by the way, you can write to me at LouisvillePolitics@gmail.com or at MyViewMatters@AOL.com. But anytime we talk about these things, every one of you guys are voters, and you're asking, why are these candidates spending all their time on Clear Channel WHAS? Why aren't they coming on your show? Well, I'm going to tell you. We can get anybody we want on air. It's the truth. You know, we have Rand Paul on here on occasion. Rand Paul is the probably the biggest national name in presidential contenders right now. And Rand Paul comes on air. He's not scared. Yet Matt Bevin campaign doesn't answer emails or anything else. They even went door to door with our good friend in Dale Gillespie's neighborhood, and Dale got to talk with his campaign staff, and everybody that pays attention to MVM Radio on our Thursday Night Truth show with Dale the Truth Gillespie knows that Dale is a big Matt Bevin fan. And Dale talked to them, explained to them who we were, how many voters we had, and you know, how many people listened to this show, and they were shocked. They wanted a name and number on how to contact me to get information. And guess what? Dale supplied it. Guess what else? Still no call. This has been over a week ago. So what that tells me is, you know, whether you like what Matt Bevin is saying or not to me at this point is irrelevant. But I don't think this guy wants to win. He's either scared to win or he's just setting up bait for somebody else. And the only somebody else in the race is Anson Lundgren Grimes. I'm not sure what to think of this guy. If you guys think I'm wrong on this, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. You know, the guy doesn't want to involve himself in the people that are going to make the difference. He spends all his money with out-of-town media place over in Indiana. He hasn't even hired a local media presence. You know, he paid Mandy Kopp and Clear Channel thousands of dollars in ads at 84WHAS, using Mandy Connell. You know, she's still Clear Channel employee. She just happens to be up in Colorado on a KHOW program. You know, and ignoring the people who are going to vote. And then when they ask for information and give it to them from our good friend Dale Gillespie, and they still don't return calls, they still don't want to be involved, I don't know what to tell you guys. Now, if I call them tomorrow and say, hey, come on air tomorrow night, you know, an X amount of time and stuff, well, they'll jump right on that, I'm sure. But if they really wanted to hear from you, if they really wanted to know what the voters in Kentucky really think, this is where they should be going. Well, we are number one, and they just want to continue ignoring it, and they don't follow through with what they say they want to do. So I do have problems with Matt Bevin. It's easy for me to see why he's down 40 points to Mitch McConnell. Whether you like Mitch McConnell or not is irrelevant at this point. You know, but Mitch McConnell is clearly the front runner in the Republican primary. I think at this time it's a safe bet right now to say that Mitch McConnell is going to face off against Alison Lundgren Grimes. You know, that's another pretender, but she's going to have Democrats backing her, so who the hell knows how that's going to go. You know, but it is stuff that we have to start looking at. So, you know, here we are. It's a couple of months away from the primary in Kentucky, and you know, some people just still aren't doing the things that we've been begging them to do. I mean, with Matt Bevin's campaign, we've even went public with it. He should have fired campaign manager, whoever's running that thing, 3 or 4 months ago. He should have never allowed himself to go down into the dirt and sling mud at Mitch McConnell, who is an entrenched politician who has a loyal base. You know, here Matt Bevin is, you know, a transplant from the East, you know, up in Connecticut, and the Bell and everything else. He transplanted to Louisville, Kentucky. You know, and he's going out slinging mud and not going out and doing the necessary things to get elected as a new candidate. So there's been a lot of missteps in the Bevin campaign. And the sad reality is I think Matt Bevin on the surface, as I've said before, appears to be a really nice guy. But when it comes to running a political campaign, when it comes to taking care of business and doing things the right way, I'm sorry, folks. There's just not much there in my mind to trust, select, or like. So we really got to start paying attention to some of this stuff. And speaking of Rand Paul, I'll point this out real quick, too. According to political ticker at CNN blogs, CNN did a poll. It was a CNN ORC new poll, and it came back as far as who should be a who do you prefer in a presidential Republican presidential primary election? Who do you prefer to be your candidate? Rand Paul actually led this CNN poll. That is very, very interesting to me. 16% of Republicans and independents lean toward the GOP. So they would likely support Rand Paul for the 2016 nomination. Representative Paul Ryan in Wisconsin, who was also the 2012 vice presidential nominee to Mitt Romney, got 15%. And I was really surprised by this one because the third one in the race in this poll was Texas Governor Rick Perry. He's actually considering another bid, and he got 11%. I didn't think Rick Perry was worth anything back when he ran in 2012, and I really don't honestly think he needs to waste his time running again. But I was shocked to learn that he came third at 11%. And the only other person that came in double digits was actually Mike Huckabee, former Arkansas governor, and everybody knows who Mike Huckabee is. He actually got double digits as well. So it's pretty interesting this way it works out. In January, they had Rand Paul tied with Paul Ryan, and now that's kind of flip-flopped. And it's very strange, but Ron Paul, even as well-liked and well-known as Ron Paul has been and was, he never, ever attained the top spot in any poll. So this is kind of interesting. For you guys who are doing the math, trying to figure out all these other people, the other potential, and I say potential here, folks, so we still don't know who's going to be in it. They were included in a survey, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. He only got 9%. Chris Christie, New Jersey's embattled governor, Chris Christie, and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas each got 8%. And I actually expected Ted Cruz to be higher than Paul Ryan. I was surprised by that. Marco Rubio of Florida, 5%. Rick Santorum, who again ran in the last election in the primary, he got 3%. So I would hope that Rick Santorum and Marco Rubio, because neither one of these guys have polled very well at all in any of their previous polls, and still way early, I get that. But I hope to start paying attention and maybe decide not to waste our time. And you take that all the way up to, Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, if you wanted to. So we've got all these different things, but this is a recent poll. It was just done last week. It was done with 801 people. It included, here's the interesting thing, that the sample didn't include just Republicans. No. It included 367 Republicans and independents who leaned toward the GOP, but the poll also included 372 Democrats and independents who leaned toward the Democratic Party. Now, why you have Democrats voting in a poll to see who the GOP candidate should be, God only knows. But they did. So it was interesting that these results came out that way. So I thought that was very, very peculiar. One story we need to mention, Attica Scott. Once again, this woman drives me crazy. But Metro Councilwoman Attica Scott is going to go ahead and move forward anyway, trying to get an ordinance passed that's going to raise the local minimum wage to $10.10 over the next 3 years. So you're basically talking from going from $7.25 to $10.10 over the next 3 years. That's a raise of about 95 cents a year for 3 years. I argue this all the time. If you get a dollar an hour raise for 3 years, every year, that's great. The first year, you're going to get $40 a week on a full-time job. Minus taxes, of course, so that cuts you down to about 30. So it'll be $120 more a month. Sounds great, right? Except when your employer has to raise prices to pay your salary, what does that do? Because it doesn't matter whether you work at McDonald's, it doesn't matter whether you work at Kroger, it doesn't matter whether you work at a restaurant, whatever these low-wage jobs are that are paying minimum wage. If you get paid at McDonald's and you go to Kroger to spend money, Kroger has to raise their employees' wages too. So Kroger now has to raise the price of their goods. to offset those employee costs. It's not just Kroger. You leave Kroger, if they don't have gas, let's say you go to Speedway or Thornton's and get gas. Gas is already expensive, but now those employees are getting the same raises you are. So now they have to raise their prices on everything else within that store. So now the cost of your sodas goes up, the cost of your chips goes up, the cost of your groceries goes up, the cost of everything goes up. So you got a net income of $30 more a week the first year. But in most cases, at least in my experience, when that minimum wage goes up, that $30 you just got doesn't make a difference in your life. It doesn't bring you out of the poverty level. It doesn't do anything to enhance your quality of life. What it does is that $30 just now costs you $50 or $60 more a week. So now you've lost. You've got a net loss in your income of $20 to $30 a week. For every dollar that you get in that minimum wage hike, it costs you $2 an hour in return. At least that's been my experience. Explain to me where I'm wrong, because I don't understand that logic. Because now you're hurting yourself. The federal government and these Democrats are going to go out there and tell you, hey, see what we did? We got you more money. The Republicans didn't. It's not that the Republicans don't want you to get more money. It's not the conservatives, I should say, because the Uniparty is alive and well, Democrats and Republicans. It's not that the conservatives don't want you to get more money, but they want you to get educated and put yourself in a better marketable position in the open market and let the market dictate that wage, because they know, any conservative, any economist, they know that when that minimum wage goes up, everything else goes up along with it, and you actually lose ground. If it's going to cost you $20 more than you're taking in every week to survive, how long does it take you before you have to lose your apartment, you know, you have to lose your vehicle, you can't afford to drive it anymore? You know, it's just one more way to start taking money out of the poor pocket. And, of course, what happened then? Well, not only are they going to take money out of your pocket on your minimum wage job, chances are you're going to get to the point where, hell, it's easier for me to go on Section 8 housing if I'm not working, so let's just quit the job. I can get food stamps to pay for this. I can get Section 8 housing to pay for my home. I can work part-time somewhere to cover that $20, $30 a month it's going to cost me in rent then. You know, you've got all of these different avenues, government programs available to you for these handouts. It becomes more enticing to go ahead and live on the government dime than it is to go out and make it for yourself. It affects you emotionally. It affects you financially. It affects your complete thought process. It makes you dependent. It makes you dependent on government. And when you depend on the government to feed you, what are you going to do when they can't? There is no way that this country can sustain the path that we are on. There's just no way humanly possible. None of us can go out and continue living on borrowed money and our checkbooks without there being a day of reckoning. If anybody in this country lived the same way that our government does, there wouldn't be a person in this country with a job. Then what? If you don't have any tax revenue coming in, people who need it the most can't get it. So why is Attica Scott trying to force this down Louisville's throat? She's not even sure she's got the Democrat majority backing yet, or even Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher, but she thinks she will. You know, and even the Congressional Budget Office has said that if you raise minimum wage to $10.10, that's going to reduce the U.S. employment workforce by 500,000 workers. And even if the wage increase benefits some workers, the CBO was telling us exactly what I just said. It's actually going to be a reduction in real income because of high prices for consumers. Folks, Don't be fooled by the libtards of the agenda. Don't be fooled by this communistic destroy America crap. Think about your future. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Pause for the calls, if you will. Don't forget, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. And for you in the listening queue, that little number one on your dial pad will come in real handy. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Inspiration Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
We are back right here at the MVM Radio Network. This is Ed Springson, your host. I tell you, you know, we're going into break. We're talking about the minimum wage stuff. We've talked about Mitch McConnell and all these other things. And by the way, I did get a text from Ed Martin. He's been busy. You know, he has to run this business that Barack Obama built for him. So he's been busy. Matter of fact, here he is right now. I said he was running late. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Running ragged, Mr. Springston. Running ragged. Yeah, you sent me that text like, oh, crap. and we're being perfectly honest with the listeners because that's exactly what I wrote. Oh, crap. So I had to still working on cleaning up a few minute last few minute work details, but it goes that way sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I knew you was running late. That's why I sent you a text, make sure you're okay. We've been talking a lot about Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin and, you know, this minimum wage hike that Attica Scott wants to put here in Louisville and how it's going to destroy business, what a net loss it is. I'm really kind of curious. I do want your input on that. You know, this $10.10 minimum wage that Attica Scott wants to throw on us, I was actually going to move on, but since you're here now, let's go ahead and forward this for a second. You know, what is so hard about people to understand that is actually a net loss in your real income today? Why is it that people don't get that?
Well, I don't understand, you know, what they – it's again, it's just what you've got is this gradual shift that's occurred in society, and the politicians are more than happy to help it along. But minimum wage is and should be – granted, it should be, and unfortunately sometimes it's not – it's an entry-level job. It's a no-skill, no-experience entry-level job. Always, you know, traditionally, it has been. Now, to be real honest, yeah, there are some employers out there that are taking advantage of the fact that, as we've spoken before, that the real unemployment rates might be way into double digits, 14% or so. So there are those that take advantage of it. But, you know, the other fact is, I listen to these people that say, we want a living wage, we want this. It's like, wow. You know, the taxpayers pay for at least 12 years of education for you so that you might pick up some usable skills. or at least learn to learn and then pick up some usable skill sets, you know, that are in demand. And if you don't, I just don't see anymore where that is my problem as an employer. If you come to me dumber than a sack of hammers and demanding that I give you some kind of minimum wage. It's like, no, I'm sorry. As we've discussed before, so many of these jobs are on the cusp of being eliminated anyway through automation, through RFID, through
offshoring. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because when we talk about automation, I mean, we've covered on this show, you know, even McDonald's. The McDonald's employees are wanting to strike and all this crap, wanting $15 an hour so that they can stand there with their thumb up their butt and ask if you want fries with that. You know, and the reality is, though, that they already have machines out there that in the very, very near future, they're already being tested over in Europe, in the very, very near future, you're basically going to need one employee at McDonald's just to keep the bins full. Because these machines are going to be able to slice your lettuce, your tomato fresh, slice your hamburger, cook it fresh. Everything is going to be done by this machine and go down a conveyor line that's going to build it for yourself.
Everything's done with credit cards, so you don't even need to count to make change. If you do, the cash register will tell you how much if it doesn't dispense it on its own. And then, fact of the matter is, if you've ever seen the backside of a lot of cash registers at a lot of restaurants, they are pictures.
Right. Oh, they are. And, you know, and we already know those things.
So really, that's what you're doing. You're sitting here, you're leaning on employers. And like I said, some do take advantage of the situation. But you're leaning on employers that have dumbed down the job so far, and now that it's dumbed all the way down, you don't want to accept the realities that any 16-year-old kid that's making lousy grades in school can do your job. You've got this job, now you want to demand, you know, you want to line up behind Etika Scott, or you want to, you know, champion her cause, and you want to get out there and you want to demand that somebody pay you $20,000 a year for, you know, that job.
Well, and that's it.
At that point, you're not accepting the reality that there are people who will do that job for the same amount of money you're doing, obviously.
Well, that's exactly it. And then, you know, for anybody who thinks we're talking about being able to walk into a McDonald's and ordering on a touch screen of your own and feeding your money and getting your change, look at your self-checkouts at your Kroger stores and your grocery stores and Walmarts and that stuff.
Yep.
That's exactly what you're doing. You're scanning everything yourself. You're putting in what you have. You deposit your cash, you get exact change back, and you're on your way. They don't even need a human at those. In most cases, they're not. We've got to start looking at that. And this whole thing by Etika Scott, I just don't understand, again, why she wants to put this on a local level. Let the feds, if they want to do that at a federal level, we can't stop that. Let's quit screwing around with the local level, especially since, you know, now we've already got it decided that we're going to have the local option sales tax. It's going to be put on the ballot for us to vote on, and these nut jobs here in Louisville will vote on it. So then you're going to give the mayor of Louisville the opportunity to raise your taxes 1%. So guess what? Voila. There's another part of your minimum wage hike that just went down the drain. is wrong with people's thinking?
That, but, you know, it shows in some cases just a lack of appreciation from Etika Scott. I mean, maybe she lives in the city, is in the first district. She doesn't, you know, I guess sometimes, dear, you need to travel to the edges of Jefferson County, to the edges of the metro, and develop an appreciation for the fact that Shelby County will gladly take your jobs, that Bullitt County is taking your jobs, that Southern Indiana will take your jobs. You know, so it's like, hey, fine, build an artificial floor into no-skill, low-skill labor, and they will move to where real estate is cheaper and labor is readily available without, you know, and sometimes I'll be honest with you, I don't know many people that pay minimum wage. Actually, I don't know anybody that pays minimum wage. I don't pay it, and I pay full insurance. But a lot of businesses, just on principle and for other reasons, you know, like cost of real estate and ease of doing business, a lot of businesses will simply look at a place that says, what? You know what? I pay more than minimum wage in most cases. I would actually probably pay more than 10 but this is my business. And this is how I feel about it. It's, this is my business, and you're not going to tell me what I paid. You know, you who don't run a business, you who just want my tax, you're not going to tell me what to pay. And quite frankly, I'm going to go somewhere where I can actually be respected and not be bossed around all the time.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, I mean, if you look at some of the lowest paid jobs, I mean, look at housekeeping, for example. Housekeepers in these hotels and stuff, those are basically the bottom of the rung, lowest wage jobs you're going to get. I know a couple of people who have to do that for, you know, to make money, you know, but even they don't pay just minimum wage. They always pay at least a quarter or 30 cents higher than minimum wage. So, you know, I mean, I know that's not much better going from $7.15 to $7.50. But it is, you know, it is the fact that, you know, most employers, just to reinforce what you're saying, most employers aren't just paying minimum wage, you know, and we look at all of these things in play, you know, and it's just really disturbing. And I tell you, here's some more disturbing news. This is going to switch gears just a little bit on you, Ed, because I know you're running late to the program. I haven't hit this yet. Well, before I do this, let me ask you, Joe Sanka. I'm sure you're familiar with Mitch McConnell kicking him and keeping him out of a press conference on Monday. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't like Joe Sanka.
He's hard to like. I agree.
You know,
with you.
I think he tries his damnedest to be gonzo journalism, kind of like Hunter S. Thompson, but he's really not that good at it. But on the other hand, Mitch McConnell he's been in politics for well over 30 years. You know what? If at this point in the game you can't handle somebody that you know what his MO is, you know what his disposition is, it's like shooting dumb rodents at some point. I mean, you know what he's going to do. You know what he's going to ask. If you're not ready for it and you can't handle it, there's a problem.
Right. Well, I agree with you totally on that one. And I tell you, I was just kind of curious what your thought was on that. We've got a great story. Man, I tell you, coming out of Pennsylvania, I know this is going to surprise people, right? Anything to do with Chicago or anything to do with Philly really surprises people when you come into graft, greed, corruption. But I ran across a story today that originated, well, I got the story from Liberty Unyielding, but it actually originated at Philly.com. But it's fascinating. Apparently, Pennsylvania Attorney General's office has been running an undercover sting operation for at least 3 years, and they released four Democratic members, of the state House delegation on tape accepting bribes and money. But nobody was charged. Apparently, prosecutors began a sting in 2010. Republican Tom Corbett was the attorney general then. But after Democrat Kathleen Kane took the attorney general's job in 2013, she shut the sting operation down. And what's fascinating is she tried to say that this investigation was poorly conceived, badly managed, and it was racist because they had targeted African Americans. That's the hook here. The problem is that's a lie. Because the bribery and all these other things that were recorded were offered to everybody, Democrats, Republicans, white, black. You know, it's each individual to make their decision. It's not like they went after, you know, black, you know, Democrats and said, okay, we're going to get you and buy you off and make you get dirty. No. There was over 400 hours of audio and videotape documentation, all right, with these four Democrats doing this. So it's very, very clear that this wasn't racist, but that's how these Democrats work. You have to scream racism. You know what I mean? I don't get this.
Yeah.
They also had a former traffic court judge that was involved in this. This was all done. If you look at this, a guy by the name of Ali was in trouble. Tyrone Ali. He was arrested in a $430,000 fraud case, so he agreed to wear a wire and tape and everything. And that's where this all started. Go ahead. I mean, this is just phenomenal to me.
To me, you know, I'm not racist at all. It's if you do the crime, you do the time. And
right.
If you're a public servant, you're not just held to a standard, you're held to a higher standard. So
right.
I don't even care. I don't, you know, it's doubly offensive that, you know, and I hate to quote one of the George Bushes, but it's the soft racism of low expectations.
Well, yeah. It's fast.
I don't care what color you are. If you're going to violate the law, if you're going to violate the law and violate a public trust, you deserve to be burned for it. You know, so this person is basically saying, in so many words, we can't prosecute them because, you know, that would be expecting too much of them to actually uphold their oaths and be honest and be legitimate public servants, you know. Of course they did. They can't help it. They're black. You know, that's basically what we're saying here. So,
well, it's totally pathetic.
You know, it's racism. It's just being used in a slightly different way. And, you know, if Pennsylvania wants to elect people like that, God bless state rights, man. Y'all can elect all those idiots you want.
Well, these are the same people who think it's okay for the Black Panther Party, or the new Black Panther Party, I should say, to sit at a polling location with bass and threaten white people to go on in. They better vote for Barack Obama. They're not allowed to vote at all. Let's go to the phones. I think this is our good friend Paul.
Hi, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. How are you, sir?
Hey, listen, I need to get a clarification. I heard Ed Martin say something just a moment ago. I wanted to make sure that I heard it correctly. Did he say public serpents?
Serpents or servants?
Well, I guess at that point you do move from a public servant to a public serpent.
Okay, I'd go with that.
One is a noble calling. The other is an apt description, I guess.
There
it's
you
what
go.
We have today, isn't it?
There you go.
And you said that the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office is not prosecuting these people?
No. The former Attorney General was Republican Tom Corbett. Okay. He was the one who was spearheading this sting operation. These bribes were given, offered to Democrats, Republicans, everything. The only ones who actually accepted the bribes were Democrats. And, you know, just because these four just happen to be black Democrats, Democrat Attorney General Kathleen Kane, who took the office in 2013, she shut this whole thing down and said it was poorly conceived, badly managed, and it was racist because it targeted African Americans, when everything about this screams that that's a lie. And they used a guy by the name of Ali. Apparently, Tyrone Ali, to wear the wire and tape and everything else, because he was arrested in a $430,000 fraud case. So he was, of course, trying to, you know, get sentence reduction or get some favorable treatment there. But it's fascinating because there were, you know, this is how cheap you can buy people. Traffic Court Judge Thomasine Kynes was given a bracelet by Ali. You know, you got four state lawmakers, State Rep Ronald Waters, accepted more than one payment. The total he ended up getting was about $7,650. State Rep Vanessa Brown took $4,000. State Rep Michelle Brown Lee took $3,500. State Rep Louise Bishop took about $1,500. Now, this is what's really peculiar here. Bishop denied receiving any money, and Brown Lee denied receiving any money, and Brown flat out decided not to talk about it. What is very, very interesting about that is they've got it all on tape, but since their good friend, a Democrat Attorney General Kathleen Kane, decided to go ahead and shut this down and scream racism, none of that stuff is evidentiary anymore, so they can deny anything they want to deny, and there's nobody that can stop them from doing it. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it, Jack Conway? But anyway, so when we look at this stuff in play, it's very interesting. And Brown, I mean, they've got her on tape that Ali gave her an envelope with $2,000 in it. And Brown accepted the money, was going to put it in her purse, looked in the envelope, saw $2,000, and said, "Yo, good looking, thank you twice." You know, that's a thank you for each grant. So how can we not do anything about this? Because this is something that if Pennsylvania didn't do anything about, the federal authority would definitely do something about, except we've got racist Attorney General Eric Holder leading the way. What do we do here, guys?
Well, I'm fairly well at a loss. They scream racism. Now, without knowing, I'm going to say that this guy that they pegged for $230,000 fraud, doesn't sound like, he sounds like he's got some ethnicity in there somewhere. So I'm thinking, dude, you did $250,000 fraud and they're cutting you a deal? That doesn't sound racist at all to me. It sounds like the AG is more than willing to cut deals with people irrespective of their ethnicity or anything.
Sure. And, of course, again, this was something that was offered to Democrats and Republicans. Four Democrats and a judge were the only ones that took advantage of it. So explain to me how that is racist. You've got white representatives who were offered things, on how to vote on stuff. So explain to me how that's racist. I honestly don't know. And Ali, in the case of Brown, for example, the one who said thank you twice, and when he gave her the money, he urged, if you will, he wanted her to vote against the bill that was going to be, it was a voter ID bill is what it was. He wanted her to vote against the voter ID bill when it came in front of her. And, of course, she did. Nobody wants voter ID in Pennsylvania. My gosh. That's the whole thing.
I wouldn't want voter ID either if I was going around getting busted for taking bribes. I'm going to need all the dead people voting for me. I can.
Well, there you go. Like I said, this guy was guilty. He got caught in a $430,000 fraud case.
Ooh.
So, maybe that's what the fraud was, offering bribes and getting things back. So this was something, he was a low-level lobbyist. So this was something he was already familiar with, and that's why they wiretapped him. Said, hey, look, you agreed to turn dime and wiretap for us. We'll cut you some slack on this. He wanted to identify everybody involved. So apparently Ali did. They got caught, and it's no big deal. Let it go. Because now we can't use it as evidence because this Democrat attorney general wants to pay political favors back, and the idiot Eric Holder in a federal attorney general isn't going to do anything about it either. So this is the new America, folks. This is why you have to wake up. This is why you have to wake up and get involved. Paul, go ahead. Okay. I guess Paul's off air.
I'm not sure that right now that we can do a whole lot about it. I think it's going to have to reach some kind of critical mass, and we'll have to have some type of uprising.
Well, here's the thing. We know we're in the midterm elections this year. Let me ask both of y'all a serious question. We'll start with it, of course. Let me ask both of y'all a serious question. Do the Republicans take over the Congress this November? Do they get the Senate back and maintain the House?
I think it comes down to individual candidates. If they put up some good candidates that aren't radical, let's be honest. I mean, it's good to have a few hardcore liberty-minded Tea Party types in there, but a lot of states are a little more moderate. So I think if they put up some intelligent, problem-solving candidates, and they don't get either polarized to the extreme right, or they don't just put up another machine candidate in some cases that are not real popular, I think they could easily take it over. But if they're unimaginative and they just they make it about disliking Obamacare, and that's about it. I think the coin toss at that point. I think if they come up with some really viable, reasonable, Eisenhower-like positions, I think they could flatten the Democrats. But it remains to be seen what they come out of their primary season with.
Okay, I'll respond to that in a minute. Go ahead, Paul.
I think it has the makings of a major power shift between the two parties, but does that necessarily make it good for the people at large? See, moving the power away from the Democrats to the Republicans, I don't know that that's going to solve a whole lot of these issues. I really don't. I think it's just one gang getting the power over the other gang, the way it is now.
Well, yeah. I think at the end of the day, the Uniparty is like the Bloods and the Crips. They're both crooked as hell, doing everything illegal they can. But today the Bloods on the streets, tomorrow the Crips do. You know, it is interesting because, Ed, you know, you're talking about if you get the right candidates. And I'm not being hypercritical here, okay? But, I mean, I think that applies in any election. You know, what I'm curious about, because, you know, when you mentioned Obamacare, what I'm curious about is with Obamacare being mentioned, more than 50% of the public, including both Democrats and Republicans, are very disappointed and can't stand Obamacare, and they don't support Obama anymore just because of that one issue. His approval ratings are at an all-time low. When you look at what's going on with Eric Holder, the IRS scandals, the Fast and the Furious, Benghazi, are still clinging to Hillary Clinton for some reason. But you know, that's for the presidential race. Here in the midterm elections, the question for me really is, you know, are people so dissatisfied with the way Barack Obama has done for the last 5+ years? Are they so dissatisfied with Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and the obstructionism that the Senate has been putting out there, Democrats? Are they willing to take a risk that the Republicans control the House and the Senate? And are they willing to then think that we're going to be able to move forward? Go ahead.
I think, like I say, I think that's a real possibility, and I think it's one that by default, and the way some of the Democrat candidates are acting, they know that's a real possibility. And our own Alison Lundgren Grimes is just gets here in the headlights when somebody says, you know, well, would you like Barack Obama come to the state and campaign for you, or where do you stand on Obamacare? Are you going to support its implementation? You know, you're in the headlights. Now, when Bill Clinton comes, because everybody can wax nostalgic, you know, it's all good. But, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, if you have not heard from Alison Lundgren Grimes, I don't see Pelosi. I don't see Barack Obama. I don't see Harry Reid. They're not coming to this state because they're not wanted in this state. And I think that's probably the case in a lot of places. So, you know, on the other end of the coin, I guess it depends on how well Democrat candidates can distance themselves and from the administration and from the leadership in the House and the Senate.
Okay, fair enough. It's getting late. I tell you what, it's late and you got a late start, Ed, but we're going to give you a chance for final thoughts. Paul, thanks for the call. Man, I'm not watching the clock at all tonight. Thanks for the call, Paul. And I'll talk to you real soon, Paul. All right, Ed, final thoughts. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you're not watching the clock. Talk about you. Final thoughts. I'm going to go back to the Attica Scott thing. I mean, you know, I guess on one hand I can respect her because she is what she is and she doesn't try to cover it up. But on the other hand, I think it's just this hubris that a politician's come up with way too often. They get elected, they demand that they be called council person or whatever. You know, you address me as senator or representative or what. And they get this hubris, and all of a sudden somebody with little or no business experience, little or no job creation experience, just kind of like a Hollywood movie star that all of a sudden, once they make a couple $1 million, they think they're an expert on global warming or extinct, you know, animals on the endangered. They become experts. So I find that extremely, extremely expensive. It's offensive and expensive sometimes. You know, because I've spent my whole life in business, I've made my share of mistakes, and I've done a lot of, you know, I've made my share of successes. And for somebody to sit back and you just want to look at them and say, what's your business experience? Before you go telling me how to run my business, what exactly is your experience? You know, and it's, oh, I'm sorry, you will address me as councilwoman before you ask me a question. It's like, oh, no. That's no. And that's, I think, I find it offensive, you know, and it doesn't matter whether you're operating a business out of your home or whether you're the CEO of Ford. It's offensive that job creators have to listen to that crap. And it is crap. So,
well,
you know, I would wish that the people who back her, you know, look, if you're not a job creator, you know, you're a customer probably, and we're more than willing to hear what you have to say, but, you know, for the love of God, back with zero experience and tell people who have created job and you know, tax-paying jobs, health insurance-paying jobs, and their businesses pay taxes, and they work 60, 70 hours a week to do it. Don't tell them how to run their business. And, you know, I would ask if anybody out there, the final thought, anybody out there that works for somebody like that, stop and think about that for a second. If some council person is telling the person who gave you a job, and in some cases a really good job, that some council person with no job experience is out there telling them how to run their business. Like, wow. I just find that offensive on so many levels.
Well, I find a lot of things offensive. That's just one of them. I tell you, you know, Alice in Wonderland Grimes, and that's my new name for her, Alice in Wonderland Grimes really has no clue. And I tell you, it's fascinating because I honestly think that you don't see Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and them, anybody coming here to Kentucky other than Bill Clinton. And it's interesting because Bill Clinton she's embracing Bill Clinton coming in to campaign for her just to bring her money. You know, and everybody will get money because of Bill Clinton. But ironically, Alice in Wonderland Grimes is out there making one of the only issues that we know she stands for is she wants to make women's rights the issue. She's using a woman's abuser like Bill Clinton to help her spread the message. I don't get it. That's just me. I also don't get things like Matt Bevin and the way he's running his campaign. You know, the bottom line is we, the American people, deserve better choices of what we get. And until we start finding a way to make it fair to allow other candidates on the ballot, or we tell people none of the above and start standing up against them, then we're going to continue having these bad choices where we're electing the best of the worst. And that's awful. That's not democracy. So my challenge to each and every one of you guys is to get involved. Call every candidate in your district. Literally, call every candidate in your district on your ballot and ask them where they stand on the issues that you care about. Do that. Overload their phones. Ask them where they stand. Because they need to hear that. And for you candidates who listen to this show, and believe me, there's a whole lot of you to do. We've got the IP addresses. If you want to get heard, if you want the people who are going to go vote for you to get heard and get your issues out there, I mean your real issues, not the Alice in Wonderland Grimes who turns away her eyes every time she gets asked a legitimate question, we'll be more than happy to give you airtime. We'll be more than happy to do that. The problem I've got with giving all this free airtime to all you candidates is you want to come on our air and tell our voters what you want them to hear. You don't want to take phone calls, and you want to spend our advertising money on other places who don't have a voter in the world that's going to go to the polls and vote for you. To me, that's not a fair transaction. I'm not telling you to pay for to play. No, no, no. Far from it. I'm telling you, if you want to get voters, there's 120,000 people who are on my website each and every month. We have tens of thousands who listen to this show. You don't go to political shows or political websites unless you're interested in politics and want to see what the issues are and see what you're concerned about. That means that you're a voter. So put that in your heads, you politicians. You go to the people instead of making the people come to you, and you would be amazed at how many more people will get involved in the process. You think I'm lying? Give me a call, 502-742-8519. Or write me at myviewmatters@aol.com and let's talk about it. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here, as usual, for Wednesday night. Ed, I guess that's it for you this week. We'll see you.
All right, sir.
All right, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Thanks for the call.
Sorry about being late tonight.
You're okay, man. And, Paul, thanks again for
the
call.
Doc's
my pay. it is. I already took a zero off of it, my friend. For the rest of you guys, we'll see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Take care. Have a good one. God bless. We'll see you.